But we're going to kick things off with Nell Scovell. Nell has spent over 30 years working as a TV writer, producer, and director. She's written for many famous shows, including The Simpsons, Late Night with David Letterman, and Murphy Brown. She also created and executive produced Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. She's got a new memoir out called Just the Funny Parts and a Few Hard Truths about sneaking into the Hollywood Boys Club. Nell broke into Hollywood by writing an unsolicited script, a spec script, as they call them in show business. The script was for Gary Shandling's late 1980s sitcom. The show was called It's Gary Shandling Show. So why did Nell Scovell choose to write a spec script for It's Gary Shandling Show?
It was absurdist, and that was always my favorite kind of comedy, whether it was Monty Python or Albert Brooks. I saw his movie Real Life, and that is what made me think I could be a comedy writer. So I send this script in, and they buy it, and I end up flying to Los Angeles, and I meet with Gary, and he pays me this compliment where he tells me, "You write like a guy." So that was the late 80s, and I think there was this belief that guys wrote hard jokes that made you laugh, while women wrote softer jokes that made you think, oh, how delightful.
Exactly. So how did you take that at the time when Gary Shandling told you, you write like a guy?
Well, he was one of my heroes, and there's this great documentary on HBO about him.
The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, if you watch it, is, you know, Gary is very insecure, and a lot of his jokes are about relationships. And so it only occurred to me recently that Gary wrote like a girl. And by the way, I totally mean that as a compliment.
Well, yeah, I would take that as a compliment. But getting back to when he told you about your spec script, you write like a guy. And because he was one of your heroes, at first you took that as a compliment, right? You were just so excited that he thought you were funny, right?
Yeah. Looking back, you know, it's never fun to be seen as your gender. And he certainly was singling me out that way. By the way, I grew up in this family where my aunts were really funny. I watched the Thin Man movies and thought Myrna Loy was funny. And Carol Burnett was my favorite show. And Joan Rivers was on The Tonight Show. And I thought she was funnier than Johnny Carson. So I never for a second believed that women weren't as funny as men.
Yeah, and you were right. After Gary had said that, when you left, you had this moment where you were trying to think of a better response, right? A better comeback?
Yeah, when he said, "You write like a guy," I wish I'd said, "Oh, that's just something I did in the snow once."
That's great. You wrote a freelance episode for The Simpsons, One Fish, Two Fish, Blowfish, Bluefish. And this was the first time you'd written for an animated show, right?
Oh, it was.
Was that liberating in the sense that you could let your imagination go wild without having to worry about limiting the story to a certain number of sets and worrying about production costs?
Oh, that's exactly right. Animation allows you to write a major motion picture, a budgeted TV show. And so, you know, you can cut to Homer in the sushi restaurant, and then you cut to him in the hospital, and he can make this bucket list of a dozen things he needs to do and race around and, you know, wind up in jail. So you just have endless sets and possibilities.
When that aired, was that a big highlight for you? Because The Simpsons was like this huge show.
It was. And in fact, I tend not to watch my episodes ever on the air because once they hit the air, there's nothing you can change. And that's always a little frustrating. But The Simpsons was one that I did watch with my sister Claire and her husband Rob. And one of the surprises while watching it on air was I had written a tag that had been cut for time and replaced with a very, very funny, very short tag of Homer vows that he will now live his life to the fullest.
From this day forward, I vow to live life to its fullest.
And then you cut to him sitting on the couch, eating pork rinds and watching bowling on television.
Yeah.
And one of the things in Just the Funny Parts is I was given permission to publish the tag that was not aired. And it really ties up a lot of the storylines in the episode. So it's fun if you're a fan of the show.
What is the tag that didn't air, or do people have to read the book? Do you want
they
to reveal
have to
it?
Read the
yeah,
book.
I thought so.
I don't do a very good Homer Simpson, or I would try to do it here.
Fair enough. In July 1990, you got a job as a writer for Late Night with David Letterman, and you were only the second female writer ever hired there. So it must have been a very exciting day when you were walking into 30 Rockefeller Center on your first day at work. Can you tell me about that first day? What do you remember about it?
I was living the Liz Lemon dream years before she was created. Yeah, you walk to 30 Rock and, you know, you feel like you've been accepted into this amazing club. You know, so many of my favorite writers had passed through that show. It was really my dream job. I had already worked in LA on sitcoms, so I took this huge 75% pay cut to go back to New York and work for Late Night Variety. But Dave Letterman was the funniest person on TV.
Yeah.
And this voice of the generation. Yeah, it was very, very exciting.
Yeah. You had a disturbing experience on your first day when you were chatting with a new colleague. Can you tell me about the conversation?
Well, I wouldn't say it was disturbing. It was very odd.
So he
stopped by my office to say hi. And then at the end of our brief conversation says to me, before this is over, I will see a tampon fall out of your purse. It was weird.
Yeah. How did you react at the time when he said that?
Well, at the time, I kind of just thought, well, that's a strange thing to say.
Yeah.
And over the years, I would tell friends this story to try to figure out what he meant by it. And it was only decades later, when I was working on Lean In with Sheryl Sandberg, that I learned about this thing called stereotype threat. And this is when we have all this bias in our culture and it gets internalized. So they've done studies where when boys and girls take math tests, if you ask them to answer the question, what is your gender, before they take the test, girls will perform worse on those exams because being reminded of their gender and that girls don't do as well in math creates anxiety, which prohibits them from doing their job as well as they could. Mm. So I think it's possible. I don't think it was conscious, but I think subconsciously he wanted to remind me of my gender and this myth that women aren't as funny as men, and to kind of throw me off my game.
Yeah. And did that throw you off your game? What was your experience like working on Late Night with David Letterman?
There were parts of the job I absolutely loved. You know, in the afternoon, we would get our top 10 topic, and you would go into your office, and for 45 minutes, you would just write all the jokes you could think of. And I still remember my very first entry into the top 10 list was for the top 10 least popular summer camps. And I slid in at number 10 with Camp Tick in beautiful Lyme, Connecticut.
That's good. That's very good. How long did you stay?
So I stayed through my first cycle and they picked up my option to stay for another cycle. And then about a month into that, I realized I just wasn't going to thrive there. I wrote a piece in 2009 for Vanity Fair about how it was a hostile environment for women. This whole thing was kicked off by Letterman going on air in 2009 and stating bluntly, I have had sex with women I work with.
So you were there, what, 8 months, 5 months only or something?
5 months, I think.
Did you meet with David to tell him you were quitting?
I was called into his office after I told the head writer, was Steve O'Donnell, that I was leaving the show. Yeah, I mean, back then, Dave did know all the writers by names and had some connection with them. You know, I thought about telling him that the show was a hard place for me to work, but I chickened out and I just said I missed L.A.
Hmm. You mentioned that writing the essay for Vanity Fair 19 years later, that must have been a tough decision to make. Was it something you kind of struggled with? Gee, should I do this? Is it going to have a negative effect on my career? Am I still going to be able to get work? Did you worry about that kind of thing?
I did. So the book is divided into sections, which are based on this old showbiz joke that a friend told me using my name. So the joke is, what are the four stages of a Hollywood writer's career? Stage one, who is Nell Scovell? Stage two, get me Nell Scovell. Stage three, get me a younger, cheaper Nell Scovell. And stage four, who is Nell Scovell?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, at the end of this joke, you return to obscurity. And what I realized is that question of who is Nell Scovell became an existential one for me. And it became, what do I stand for and who do I stand with? So in 2009, I wanted to make this point, not just about sexual harassment and sexual favoritism, but to pivot to gender discrimination in the writer's room. Because at that time, both Letterman and Leno had zero female writers.
Wow.
And I also want to add, in 33 years on the air, the Letterman writer's room never included a single person of color.
Wow.
So I stood up and I spoke out about this oversight and pointed out that you literally couldn't do worse when it came to diversity. And I did think it could end my career, and it ended up being one of the best things I ever did.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great. And you know, that joke you just referenced, I think we might have to add a fifth stage to it, and which is a replay of number two, get me Nell Scovell.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah, I think so.
You loop back.
Right, exactly. We loop back because we've already looped back with the who is Nell Scovell. So it makes sense in this book. This is going to make you even more of a part of popular culture than you already are. I read in an interview you said that you think that empathy is undervalued in a lot of comedy writers' rooms. And
yeah,
I'm wondering if this means that comedy writers are creating characters who are lacking in empathy, and that the majority of characters we see are a bunch of unsympathetic, self-obsessed characters, or am I extrapolating too much here?
No, I love that theory. If I had thought of it myself, I would have put it in the book.
Put it in the paperback.
And okay.
Just give me a thanks. Thanks, Doug Gordon, at the end.
I think that's incredibly smart. You should write an op-ed about it.
Okay. Thanks, Nell. Do you have a favorite joke that you've written? That's a tough one because you've written so many.
While working on the memoir, I did go back and read some of my early scripts. And, you know, you forget what you wrote back then. And I found this exchange in a Newhart script. It didn't make it to the air, but I kind of laughed even years later at it. And it's one of these woodsmen comes in and is talking to Bob Newhart. And he says, and it hit him like a ton of sticks.
Yeah.
And Bob says, don't you mean bricks? And he says, a ton of anything still weighs a ton.
Yeah, I love that one. That's great. I can't believe they didn't use it.
I know. And it's very exemplary of my favorite kind of absurdist but logical humor.
Nell Scovell is the author of Just the Funny Parts and A Few Hard Truths About Sneaking Into the Hollywood Boys Club.
Would you like to know more?
Visit us online, wpr.org/beta.